So one way to frame the practice is this dichotomy between the head and the heart, okay, the mind and the heart. You know, and in our Western world, we often keep those very separate. And much of the practice is learning how to bring those back together to see actually they're one and the same. You know, there's that famous Descartes statement, I think, therefore I am. And there's such an orientation toward the thinking mind, to the that's where our world really resides. As I've shared this little quote from James Joyce's Dubliners, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And you know, this describes us a lot of the time, that we walk through kind of a little distant from our body into our thoughts, into our story, our ideas. And it's important to realize that this isn't just those of us who are intellectually based. We can also be very emotionally based and still very much in our minds, in our story, our worry, our anxiety. Those are also being in the world of thought, really emphasizing that. So tonight, or not tonight, this afternoon, I'd like to talk about this movement from the head, you know, the mind, the thoughts, into the heart and into the body, and how that is often a very important trajectory and journey that we do as meditators. So we learn to practice that. My wife was telling me about the PBS special on the heart and something about how they're rethinking of the brain being the center of intelligence, that there's these other areas of intelligence. You know, I remember hearing that the ancient Egyptians, when they mummified somebody, they would just throw out the brain because they thought it didn't have anything to do with anything. And so, did you have a question, Carol? No. Okay. But, you know, maybe there's something onto that. They've realized that there's this other area of intelligence, or even this seat of being, that was in this different organ. So the mind to heart, you know, perhaps, you know, I think everyone that I can tell on this retreat is sighted. You know, you all have eyesight. And if you've ever done an exercise where you've blindfolded yourself and maybe you've been led around or just experienced your environment, how all your other senses start to really enlighten. They start to spark up. They become more emphasized. You know, your sense of hearing, the sense of tactile kinesiology, you're able to feel your way as you move through space in a different way, because you don't have what you rely on so much as sight. So this practice is a little bit like that our minds are like our sight for moving around. We emphasize that so much, and we're learning how to put on a blindfold in a way to allow these other senses to become highlighted, to actually come online in a deeper way. Of course, sometimes when we do that, you know, we start to lose open to the heart. There's a level of unfelt things that arise. Maybe we've been avoiding grief, avoiding anger or sadness, and it just starts to well up. And this is a natural part of practice, that we learn to kind of listen to what we haven't listened to for a while. And as that starts to rebalance, there's this different way we start to move through the world. You know, move through our relationships and our work, or whatever you do in life. And I'd like to talk about some of that, those trajectories, this movement from the heart, the mind into the heart. So one is immediacy versus time. That the world of the mind is very much time focused. You know, what am I going to do this afternoon? Next week, next year, next 10 years. There's this movement into the future, or maybe movement into the back, into the past, I should say, you know, reminiscing or trying to figure out, trying to solve, resolve things. You know, maybe the sense of regret. I just heard recently that regret, that sense of really, you know, or what do you call it, resentment, is often hoping, it's the kind of the hope that the past could be different than it was. You know, the hoping the past could be different than it was. And our minds try to make it better than it was. We try to go back and try to figure that out. And then when we go into the heart, when we start to journey into the heart, let's say the heart body, there's, instead of the time base, there's the immediacy. It's almost like the timeless comes forth. Like this morning before the retreat, I was taking a walk in the park and just pausing and just feeling the complete immediacy of this moment. How when I really open to the beauty of nature and the sense of relationship to nature, there really was no time. You know, time is something I have to invent again and again. And of course, there's the relativeness that time passes and we'll start on time and in time. There's all of those constructs from our culture and society. But from the heart's perspective, there is no time. You know, it is the timeless. So these, as I go through these, I'll go through four parts of these, start to bring that forth that if I related to this moment without time, with outside of time, notice how the heart starts to arise, the body starts to rise in response to that. The next one is the sense of wonder versus what's known. Okay, so let's say the known is, could be as simple as seeing another person and all your history with them rises to the forefront. And you know how I'm supposed to relate to that person. Whether it's a dear friend or loved one or someone you have difficulty with, or someone that you create, your mind creates as the other. Someone you see, oh, they're different than me in a way, so I have to relate to them differently. This is part of the seeds of racism, of sexism, that otherness. That sense of known. And there's also the quality of judgment, of critique, of liking or disliking. This all floods in our senses as soon as we see something or another person, or as we experience something of ourselves. We try to place it in our experience. This is of the mind. We go into the heart base. The heart goes into that sense of wonder, kind of a wordless relationship to the moment's experience. It's like the words are too much to feel that. There's a poem I often read by Rumi, Appian. Let me see if I can quote it more or less. Appian, ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. And when the soul lies down in that grass, there's even the world is too full to think, to speak of, to have no words to. Even the idea of you and me, does that make any sense? I kind of messed that up. But the idea is that when you open to the wonder of the world, it's like you go into this wordless place. And this is something that if you've ever been lucky enough to be with someone who was just born, you know, a newborn baby, or with someone on their deathbed, there's times in our lives when we just fall into that wonder. It's like this experience is too big for any words. Maybe seeing a beautiful sunset, you know, maybe being in love, that there's just this deep intimacy that you can see words create this level of separation. Meditation teaches us to start to have access to that all the time, that we can just simply drop the engagement in the mind, engagement in the world of thoughts, and allow the heart to come forth. And in its place, there's that wonder. There's that immediacy. The time falls away, and there's this timeless nature, this sense of wonder in this moment. So wonder versus what's known. The next one is the spectrum between stillness and action. Between stillness and action. So often when we go into the mind, when we see something, we know it, we judge it, we want to act. We want to do something around it. We want to get more of it, get less of it. It's that sense of impulse. And often in the retreat and also the class, that you've perhaps noticed the times when you've paused that impulse to move, paused the impulse to act. And those have been times of really an interesting learning, a deep learning around what drives you. Because so often we just go from one reaction to another reaction. We don't even realize why we're reacting a lot of the time. So is that this sense of impulse to move, to do something with. As meditators, the instruction as you've noticed, is much about just being still with, not doing anything with other than observing. This is one of the hardest things to do. I remember my meditation teacher, my main teacher, doing a dialogue with him around a sense of self and inadequacy. And he was guiding me to feel it on deeper and deeper levels without the mind, without getting lost in the mind. And so it got down to the, you know, deeper pain of it. And I said, okay, and then now do nothing with it. And I was like, no, wait a second. We're supposed to get rid of it now that we've touched it. He said, do nothing with it. Just be still with it. And it's so difficult to do that, to trust that, because that's what we've relied our whole life on. That's really what forms that sense of me, is that act of doing. And so stillness, doing nothing with, is an act of surrender, is an act of release. We'll come back in a moment at the end of the talk around, you know, action that's really infused with the heart. But just to hold that objection that may come up in your minds. Because that sense of stillness, of simply being with, that kind of unwavering attention, the unflinching meeting of your experience, is really under-cultivated, underdeveloped in the majority of us. And we learn that through practice, through going through days like today, when you wanted to get up and leave or shift and you decided to be with that experience. When you wanted to scratch an itch, you know, is when you feel that sense of impulse to move with, and instead you feel it directly without adding more to it, you're practicing this sense of stillness. And then finally, there's a sense of one versus two. Okay, one versus two. Now, the world of the mind creates two, at least two. You know, there's the sense of division, a sense of duality. At a basic level, there's me and there's what's not me. You know, there's a sense of what's other, the different people, the different, you know, some are close to us, some are different than us. But there's always that sense of separation. And even if we look inside, there's still that separation. There's the parts of myself, my mind looking down. There's my heart. There's my legs. There's my intestines. There's all separate from the seat of intelligence, the seat of knowing. And a sense of duality, you know, creating a sense of separateness. Well, we move into the realm of the heart. That sense of separation can fall away. This is it's a profound shift that can happen through our sincerity of practice. It really requires us or asks us to release that egoic contraction, you know, of being right, of being better than being worse than, to actually drop all those ideas. There is just the reality of this immediacy. Actually, all the ones I've talked about, time versus the immediacy, wonder versus what's known, the sense of stillness versus the action. We have that sense of immediacy, the sense of wonder, that sense of stillness. Then naturally, we start to loosen that sense of division, that sense of separation. And sometimes there can be that quality of almost joining in with all of the world, that there's no separation, there's no sense of division. It can happen with nature, it can happen with something very mundane, it can happen with another person. And then that, you know, the heart contracts, the heart feels that prick of anger or fear, and we create that sense of separation. Of course, separation is sometimes really helpful and necessary to protect us, to keep us safe. And yet that's the movement of the mind. So the movement of this heart to the mind, and you know, how these play out. And so again, the sense of immediacy, the sense of timeless, the sense of wonder, the sense of stillness, of that depth, that roaring stillness that doesn't move, and the sense of interconnection, of oneness, of unity. These are all what starts to unfold as we make this journey from our minds into the heart. Now, even talking about the heart versus mind creates a level of duality of separation. And so eventually our practice, we need to learn to open to this sense of the heart, almost in a more pure way or a more direct way. But eventually we have to bring in the mind back in. So it becomes not just the mind or the heart becomes, but it becomes the heart mind, becomes one thing and it's together. And this is the maturing of our practice, that we start to see how the heart can still be fully present as I relate to time, as I relate to what needs to be done, as I relate to my past. It's informed by the heart in a very profound way. I learn what needs to be learned. I plan what needs to be planned, and then I let that rest. That sense of known versus wonder. You know, instead, what's known is use that to inform how I navigate the world, how I navigate my own relationship with myself. And yet there's the wonder I always hold, even though I use that as a handle, as a way of accessing the world, I realize it's never the complete picture, that the wonder is just right there underneath the surface. I know that this person is much more profound than I can ever label or hold. And so I might lead with what I know about them, but I am willing to stop that and drop that to meet how they actually are. Even for ourselves, this idea of who you are, all the self-narrative, the self-concepts. We open to the wonder. We start to realize that we're so much more vast than anything we can conceive of, anything that we can understand. Suzuki Roshi, who I mentioned this morning, I found this quote, that wherever you are, you're one with the clouds and one with the sun and the stars you see. You are one with everything. That is more true than I can say, and more true than you can hear. So you're one with everything, and that is more true than I can say, and more true than you can hear. So he's pointing to this sense of connection, how our minds can't hold, you know, they can't, thoughts can only point that direction. So wonder versus known. And then stillness and action. This is a comment or question that comes up often in this practice, because we spend so much time learning to be still with ourselves, to meet ourselves just how we are. We ask, how am I supposed to act in the world? How am I supposed to make positive change and deal with what needs to be dealt with, whether it's my personal life or my work or the bigger hurts and wounding and difficulty of society. So I think this is one of the most important parts of the practice. It's this learning how to transform our actions from reactivity into being responsive. So, and learning how to have that responsiveness really be led by our hearts. So we learn how to connect with the heart, to connect with the body, to see what is actually here with the quality of timeless, of wonder, of stillness, and then see what action is needed, what action is the most beneficial. So then our actions start to have a different level of impact, a level of clarity and skill. And we're able to meet people who have, you know, maybe very different viewpoints than ours. And we're able to listen, hold their own view with the stillness that we've learned to hold our own. And then we can navigate, try to find a place of common ground and a way forward. And then the one versus two. So, of course, we look out and I see all these different people, all these different faces, you know, the ones that we've journeyed together, the ones I've known for many years. And there's a sense of separation. And at the same time, there is that sense of connection. As I drop the idea of self and other, there's an interconnection that rises forth. So in this way, the mind and heart stop being in conflict with each other, but become something that they really join with each other. And then our practice and our life become inseparable. They're one and the same. All right, so thank you for your attention.